September 24th, 1999, and I have the great privilege and pleasure of speaking with radio vocalist Mary Small, who entertained during radio's golden age. Mary, thank you very much for being willing to share with us.
I wish it were silver instead of gold. It's not so long ago if it's silver, right?
Well, it could
but
be.
We'll take gold.
It could be platinum.
Oh, I love that. That I like.
Mary, tell us how you discovered that you had a singing voice. How did you get involved in music and in singing? Where do you have your roots?
Well, I couldn't have discovered it because I was that young, I'm told. And they didn't have tape or anything like that in those days. But I remember uncomfortably being awakened when I wasn't even talking. I was just crawling around. But I hummed a lot. And I remember them waking me one night, I know it was dark, to ask me to sing for some company. And I just did it because I was told to do it. But that was the beginning. And a few months later, when it wasn't wake-up time, midnight, I began to enjoy the singing. And I think the reason I sang is because my father was a singer, and he couldn't see his way into the profession, and so as so many parents will, they do it through their children.
So your dad inspired you and encouraged you?
Yes, he certainly did. He pushed me. He was a theatrical father rather than what they call the mother. What do they say the mother is?
Stage mother.
Yeah, he was a stage father, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a song, he said, "You don't need friends, I'm your pal." And then he went into a song. He was writing a musical, evidently, in Baltimore. And the song was something you won't even remember. I was an infant. "Pal of my cradle days, I've loved it always. When I was a baby up on your knee." Real old corny stuff, but I remember it.
Some of that corny stuff is coming back, and people enjoy it.
There are a lot of
records that are
bringing back the 40s, but this was not the 40s.
40s, the 30s, and even the 20s. You can still buy an Al Jolson or an Eddie Cantor record.
Oh, yeah, but what kind of fidelity do you suppose it's like? Can they make nice CDs out of them?
The people who have the technical skill apparently are able to take the old records and clean them up.
Mm-hmm. I have a very large metal disc of myself on the Rudy Valley Hour when I was about 9 or 10 years old. The song was Louisville Lady, and of course the way they made the records then was with a specific kind of needle which would not work with any other kind of needle, and I still have it, but I can't play it because I can't get a needle. I don't really care that much, but the song that this child sang was called Louisville Lady, a very sexy song.
Well,
I didn't understand what it was all about, but I'll never forget the title.
Off the tape, I'll put you in touch with somebody who will be able to take that record and make you a clean copy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay, now...
Wow, what can't you do?
Well, I can't do it, but I know people who can.
Well, that's the same thing.
Your home initially was Baltimore.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, Maryland.
And how did you get started on the radio? How did you make your first radio appearance?
I was about 6 years old, and I remember in Baltimore we were listening to Uncle Jack's Kitty Hour. And, of course, who but my father said to my mother, "Fanny, you've got to get her on that show. She's better than all the others," which, incidentally, was a terrible philosophy, telling a child she's superior, you know, because I remember hearing someone I loved on that show, and I said, "Isn't she great?" And she was. I don't know who she was. But my father says, "Oh, you're better." So then I began to think I was better, which isn't good. A child should have humility. There are too many spoiled brats. Forgive me, but I had to get that in.
But you should also have self-confidence, and maybe that's what your dad was trying to do.
Well, I had when you love to sing, and you're born with it, I teach singing now, and I have some people who were born with it, some who were born a little bit with it, and so you go according to how much they have. But I never took singing lessons. My father sang to me 18 hours a day. And so singing was what I did most of all. And I didn't even have friends. And then finally when I came to New York, which I'll tell you about soon, I went to a special school where they were all theatrical and professional. And there was a place called the Mother's Room. Now, you know where I'm going. You know that I don't approve of children in show business. I mean, it's very open.
I'm letting you do the talking, Mary.
Well, come on, make me say something nice.
Well, let's get back for just a moment to the Kitty Show. Did you appear on that once, or were you on that on a regular basis?
I was on once, and I sang a song called My Future Just Passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember enjoying it. I remember doing it well and getting a lot of applause. And then they called me the miniature Kate Smith. I wasn't fat, but I had a big voice.
Now, did you involve yourself in any other Baltimore broadcasts, or did you move?
Well, at that point, didn't mean to interrupt, but at that point, my father, ever the enterprising pushy daddy, called the radio editor of, I think it was the Baltimore Sun at the time. His name was George Browning.
Mm-hmm.
And he's somewhere in the archives. He was a lovely, lovely man. And my father, being very persuasive, got him to listen to me sing. And George Browning was impressed. I'm talking about myself, but since that little girl doesn't exist anymore...
Well, that's why we're speaking, because we want to hear about yourself.
I know, but I hate to say, gee, I was great, but I remember so much, and the money that I made and wasn't able to save and wasn't given... reminds me I must have had something to have earned all of that.
Right.
But George Browning called a man who was in town that week managing another famous name, Arthur Tracy, the street singer.
Yes.
And he forced this manager, who did him a favor because, of course, he wanted a good write-up, and he let me sing for him. But I just realized that previous to that, there was a Gus Edwards... what was it? It was a contest. 2,000 kids.
Gus Edwards would travel around the country and audition children for his children's programs.
Oh, I didn't know that, but he was in Baltimore a particular week. This was before the other incident I just mentioned. I forgot the chronology. However, I sang Just One More Chance to Prove It's You Alone I Care For. The very same key, the very same voice, and I won.
That's a torch song.
Yeah, it sure is. I love it. I may do it on an album one day when I bring back some oldies. But when I went to New York with Gus Edwards, they turned me down. They said, she's a freak. She's got a woman's voice, and she's just a kid with little white socks and a little chubby face and a Buster Brown haircut. You remember Baby Rosemarie?
Baby Rosemarie grew up. She was on the Richard Dick Van Dyke Show.
Wouldn't it be terrible if we didn't grow up? I think it would be great if we didn't grow up, actually.
Baby Rosemarie did make a TV career for herself.
Yes, she went into acting.
Right.
She had hurt her voice by doing a lot of Jimmy Durante, which required that growl.
Mm-hmm.
And she developed nodules and had operations, as it was told me. And our parents were, not my mother so much, but her father, interesting about fathers and daughters, if you talk to Sigmund Freud, which is a little late now, you'd find out about it. But theatrically, it even gets worse. But my father and Rosemarie's father kept us apart. And we were kids about the same age, and we wanted to be together. And then she was on the... Tasty East is tempting with da bum bum bum. She had Tasty East, and I had Babbo. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer. Golly, you're making me remember things. I must have taken sodium pentothal or something.
This is wonderful. You just keep it up.
No, but she was on a 1215, and that was called the Blue Network and the Red Network.
Mm-hmm.
WEAF was red and WJZ was blue. Now there's no more NBC, which was blue.
Right.
And she went on at 12:15. And finally, one day, we went up to where we rehearsed separately with different pianists to Shapiro Bernstein. They had, lots of the biggest hits. And so we rehearsed, and one day we snuck into a room and started to play the piano and talk, and we enjoyed each other so much. So the
how old were the two of you at this time?
I knew you'd ask me that.
I didn't ask you the date, so that won't date you today.
Today it won't, but next week it will. Well, we were under 10 years old. I don't know who was older, but she was the greatest singer. I envied her. I felt she had the edge. But unfortunately, since I was the new kid in town, she went to California and did other things and became an actress. I admit I am not an actress. I am a singer. My voice was the same as a child as it is now. And it's kind of crazy. I would get, well, let me see. Here I was about 12 years old, 15 minutes, five nights a week, at 7:15, getting proposals of marriage until they began to announce my age. But they still kept on.
Was this before or after you appeared on the Rudy Valley program?
Oh, Rudy Valley introduced me to radio in New York.
So this was after Rudy Valley?
Yes.
How did you get involved with Rudy Valley, or how did he get involved with you?
Well, that's when the man who came in with Arthur Tracy was in town.
Was he your agent?
Arthur Tracy, no.
No, this gentleman who,
yes,
who was...
Yes, he became my agent and took me to New York, introduced me. This was after Gus Edwards. I got it mixed up before. And at least if Gus Edwards rejected me, Rudy Valley's people did not.
So your agent got you an audition with Rudy Valley,
right,
and Rudy put you on the air.
Exactly. That's how it happened. And then I got my own radio show, which I just mentioned, 15 minutes, five nights a week, which Frank Sinatra followed, and we knew each other pretty well. Me with my little white socks, he with his long pants. But he had just left the Tommy Dorsey band.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in at 11 o'clock with Walter Gross's orchestra, 17-piece live band. I rehearsed during the afternoon, and there was a commercial break of about 60 seconds. And Frank Sinatra came in at 11:15, and he was billed as the voice that is thrilling millions. And the man who managed him also managed Dinah Shore. And the reason they made records, and I didn't, many successful ones, was because at the age of 16, I got married to a songwriter. And I insisted, being a dutiful baby wife, I wanted to be kind. I didn't want him to be Mr. Small. And so I sang all of his songs. Didn't quite make it. Without a record, even then, when it was just beginning, you know, you didn't have a career.
Right.
But I did play every presentation house in America, United States. You know, there were four movies a day, let's say at the Paramount, which I played.
Paramount, the Roxy.
And the Roxy and the Strand.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what, lots of benefits. And Madison Square Garden, my God, 20,000 people in those days was, you know, a lot. It's not like concerts today. But what was I saying about the theater when I was playing? Oh, there were four movies being shown, and between the movies and news, the Fox News was so old-fashioned, as I recall, they had vaudeville, and I would headline radio's little child singing star, and I'd get out there and belt songs like, I'm heading for the last roundup, which nobody knows now. Very big Western song. And I'm an old cowhand, which I saw on the Country Western Awards the other night.
On the Rio Grande.
Oh, you remember that?
Sure I do.
Good Lord. I think I may have told you everything that's ever happened to me.
Not yet.
Talk away.
I'm sorry. Talk for a bit about what it was like in those days to perform on the radio. Were there live audiences? Were there many rehearsals?
No. There were lots of rehearsals, no live audiences, very large orchestras, and I would come from school, rehearse. I had to go to a private school. It was called the Professional Children's School.
Now, you mentioned the last time we spoke that you and Milton Berle were working.
I played the Palace Theater in Chicago, I had to take my schoolwork with me, the correspondence school.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to do my homework for me. He wanted to do a good deed. Big deed was that I flopped everything he ever did.
Milton would be proud of that today, I'm sure.
I don't think he cares very much right now. He's a kind of a happy, an octogenarian is eight, and he's in his 90s. What do you call that?
I guess he's just a ninogenarian.
Well, he's a funny fella.
Do you stay in touch, or have you been in touch with any of the people that you worked with years ago? People like Rosemary or?
No, I, everybody's on the coast, you know? And I gave up my work after I went to London because I had two children. And London was the beginning of big things for me. It would have been just great. But when you have two kids and you bring them with you, you can't get a nanny who will care. And I was so concerned about the kids. I was quite young. And I hate to say this, but my former husband wasn't exactly in the mood to be a nanny while I was singing on the stage. You see, he played the piano for me. So there was just nobody to connect the family and the profession.
Now, he was in the service during World War II, is that correct?
That's right, he was a sailor.
Now, were you active at that time during the war?
Oh, yes, I was. I played all of Mark Warnow's program, and The Daughters of Uncle Sam was a show I did with B.A. Rolfe, if you know who he was.
Wasn't he a, he was a band leader, wasn't he?
Yes, and he had an all-girl band.
Mm-hmm.
And I sang on his program for years.
Chubby fellow, as I recall.
The big man. The Daughters of Uncle Sam, we were called. Golly.
Now, some of the people who, again, according to the research or the material in John Dunning's book that you worked with, were people like Ben Burney.
That's right. I did
You were a regular on his show, were you not?
I was, uh-huh.
And what was it like to work with Ben Burney?
Well, he liked little girls. And my mother had to be around me all the time. It's not nice to talk about the deceased, but what's happening today is even worse, I'm afraid. But he liked, he was, he scared me. You don't flirt with a little 15-year-old girl and say, hi, sweetie, aren't you cute, and all that kind of thing. So you see a child, particularly a girl in those days, in the theater, has to, there are two things to look at. You're suppressed because you cannot play with kids your own age, which is a natural desire. And you are watched over so carefully that you feel like you're doing something wrong and you really want to go roller skating.
And when you played with Ben Burney, did you recall it was a half-hour show? Did you do one song or two songs per program?
I did two songs. In those days, we had to do two shows because we had to repeat it at 12 o'clock.
East Coast and West Coast.
That's right. And you never felt that you were in good voice the second time.
Now, do you remember any of the guest stars that he had on the show when you were performing with him?
He didn't have guest stars.
Okay.
It was only his own show and a singer named Bobby Gibson. And myself.
Purely music, no comedy, no...
Well, he was the comedy, and he had a straight man, and it was a very short show.
Did he ever have Walter Winchell on his show?
Oh, heck no. They were enemies, but of course it wasn't real. It was just a press agent's dream.
The Ben Burney-Walter Winchell feud.
That's right. They loved feuding because it made good copy.
You worked with Milton Cross also, I understand.
Yes, Milton Cross was my announcer. Many times when I had a very special program, and he was one of the first people who held his ear when he spoke. You must see old-fashioned pictures of that.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of gives you a sounding board. There are lots of singers who do that, which is a bad thing to do. It gives you a dependency to hear your tone.
What memories do you have of Mr. Cross, a very, very distinguished voice for the Metropolitan Opera?
A very lovely, wonderful, humble gentleman. Not often in our business.
And I understand you worked with Bud Collier.
Bud Collier was my announcer when I had the Little Miss Babbo program.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, Bud was fun. He was real great. Great guy.
I'm looking for little anecdotes. Harry Babbitt was someone else that you worked with.
Yes, now let me think. Harry Babbitt, who was the band? What was the name of the orchestra? Was Jimmy Sims?
I thought Harry Babbitt at one time was with Kate Kaiser, but
Kate
I could
Kaiser.
Be wrong.
I couldn't think of the name. You're making me go way, way, way back in my memory book. Good Lord. I want very much to do a talk show at night with memories and not like Joe Franklin. No records. Just telling wonderful incidents, like when I was with Julie Wilson in London, I walked into a restaurant and I didn't know where I was going or who was there. I said, My name is Mary Smallman, and I'm an American. And there was such a guffaw of laughter. And then it was Ziggy's, that's the name of the restaurant. And he said, there's an American here, Julie Wilson. I went back to see Julie, who was a big star in London at the time, took it by storm. And she said, when you announced you were an American, how could you imagine not being one with your accent in London?
You couldn't fool them, huh?
No, I didn't try to, but I was stupid. I to say I'm an American, they thought I was trying to be funny, but I just wanted to be accepted. I don't know what it was.
Did you work with Kate Kaiser at all, sing with his band?
No, I didn't sing with his band. But
what are some of the other bands that you sang with, popular bands?
Well, here's an interesting point about bands. When people who don't remember me now, naturally, so long ago, they ask me, what band were you with? Well, I was making thousands of dollars a week, and I was the star, and the band played for me, such as Walter Gross, who was.
What you're saying is you were not a band singer. The band accompanied you. You didn't accompany the band.
Rosemary Clooney was a band singer. Helen Forrest passed away recently, sadly. And Kitty Callan was a very good friend of mine. She sang with Jack Teagarden. All these names are unknown today.
Oh, Kitty Callan is very well. She also sang with Harry James.
That's right. But Teagarden, I don't think, is, except for jazz musicians.
Trombone Teagarden?
Right. You are amazing. I've never known anybody who remembers as much as I do about our business.
We're probably the same age, Mary.
Oh, I'm much younger.
Okay.
I'm a good 25 years younger.
I'm sure
you are.
We know that. Did you, someone here said you worked with Pick and Pat. Do you remember them?
Pick and Pat were like Amos and Andy, and they had their own show, and I was a singer on that show.
Mm-hmm.
Benny Rubin, do you ever hear of him?
Oh, yes.
I was with him. Gordon McRae was a guest on my 15-minute radio show. Oh, listen to this. Perry Como. They were trying all these new young singers out, and I was well known, and they tried them on my show. And Perry Como, in the 40s, came over to me with his pipe. He had just left Ted Weems, whose name you know.
Mm-hmm. The Whistler.
Right. And he said to me, Mary, I really have been a fan of yours for a couple of years. This was Perry Como in those days. So
that's after he left barbering. He was a barber, you know.
No, this I did not know.
Mm-hmm. On Long Island.
But he's a great singer. He's just a great, great singer. And a sweet man. Sweet man. There are lots of nice people in this business. But I can't think of any memories that would startle you right now. Except I say to mothers, and I don't have to say to fathers, because usually it's the mothers. It's rarely the fathers. People say, why don't you model your child? Why don't you put the child on Star Search and everything? And I don't want to sound or introduce, tragic note, we won't mention names, but we know about the pageants and what can happen when parents live through their children.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did, or did I not, tell you about the professional children's school had a special room called the Mother's Room.
Tell us about it.
Well, all the mothers were in there, and here's what they would say. We're auditioning today. We, mothers of prodigies, say we.
Mm-hmm.
Now, doesn't that explain that they're living through their children?
Vicarious living, yes.
Right, and tremendous competition and jealousy. Did your daughter do a commercial? No, not today. Well, mine did. I'm exaggerating, but it was not that far.
Does the program Three for the Money ring any bells?
Two for the show, vaguely, because I can't remember when it was.
A quiz program, again, with Bud Collier, Mutual?
Yes, I did it. Good Lord, I worked a lot. Why don't I have $1 million today?
Well, you probably invested it in the wrong stock.
Well, I didn't have any of it. They took it away. I was a child anyway. My ex-husband wrote the music recently for the Addams Family. And he's no longer Mr. Small. Now, if people don't know me, I say, well, I was once married to Vic Mizzi, who wrote The Addams Family. I think that's a bit of irony that would make a good novel. Don't you?
Absolutely.
Now, I don't think you can ask me anything else. I'm all squeezed out of info.
Well, let me try. Can you recall any embarrassing situations that occurred, not necessarily to you, but during a radio program while the program went on live?
When I tried to whistle and this came out.
Not live, I hope.
Live, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That comes to mind immediately. It's the only time I was embarrassed. Nothing terrible.
What about your fellow performers during a live broadcast? Anything that?
Well, I was a little girl, and they were always very careful around me.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never any.
When I say embarrassing, I don't mean of an off-color nature. I mean people who sometimes goof. People drop a script or mispronounce a word.
No.
Everything went perfectly then.
When you're prepared and you love it, and I didn't love the life, but I loved the singing. I loved the applause. And I'd say to my mother, wasn't the applause a little less the last show? She'd go insane, because I'd always ask that. But that is the beginning of the terrible life of rejection when you grow older. You know?
Let's see now. I'm looking at the write-up here, and it says, now don't get angry at me.
Is that what it says?
It says from 1933 to 1934, you were Little Miss Babo, surprise party with guests Lucille Manners, Ernest Charles, etc.
I don't remember them, but I know
and
that
you worked with the William Wurgis Orchestra.
Francis Langford, Eddie Albert, and a lot of other big names were my guests.
Was he married to Margot at the time, or did that come later?
No, that came later.
He was radio, but had a radio program called The Honeymooners at one time, I think.
I don't remember that, but it was Grace and Eddie Albert first, mm-hmm. as I recall.
Right.
But my Little Miss Babo show was, I was dressed in the most horrific, awful, if you've ever seen the can of Babo, I looked like the can. A green satin outfit. A direct copy of the costume on the can.
You worked with Ray Block as well.
Yeah, he was CBS. He was a big wheel there, and of course.
What do you recall about Ray Block?
Well, about the best band leader I ever worked with. In complete command. Consummate musician.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you say consummate?
I would say consummate, but
they're saying consummate.
Okay. Well, we're both wrong then.
I think, I'm not sure. But you know, let me close with this. I would like very, very much, as I told you earlier, to do a talk show. I don't care where it is, Tri-State, Connecticut. I know I could grab an audience.
Mm-hmm.
If I've entertained anyone during our conversation, that's the program I would call Music and Small Talk.
You've entertained me, Mary, and I thank you very much for your time.
Well, you know everything.
You are a sweetheart.
Next time I want to find out something, I'm going to call you, my friend.
Okay, I will see you in October.
You got it.
When someone walks over to you at the convention and taps you on the back and gives you a kiss on your cheek, don't slap his face, it'll be me.
No, I'll give you a kiss right back.
Okay.
Thanks,
Mary,
for calling.
My pleasure.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.